to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington on this pre-recorded program. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, June 12, 2020. The United Nations Development Program donates COVID-19 testing kits to the Ministry of Health in South Sudan.
This is the first time that South Sudan is actually receiving this consignment of the gene expert test kits from CIFID, because it's actually something that is new on the market to support countries in the COVID response. So we are privileged that South Sudan is now also catching up with other countries.
And commercial sex workers in South Sudanese capital Juba say COVID-19 has killed their business.
Before, we used to have customers, but nowadays we don't have customers. They are fearing, because this is the easy way we can get connected to coronavirus.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Greater Pibor Administrative Areas say armed young men from Pibor and Akobo counties of Jonglei State have attacked the area. The Secretary General and Acting Administrator for Greater Pibor Administrative Area says clashes started on Wednesday evening and is still going on in three villages. VOA could not independently verify the fighting. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
The Speaker of the now defunct Boma State Legislative Assembly, Judy Jonglei Boyoris, says 1,000 armed men from Bor and Akobo counties launched deadly attacks beginning on Wednesday evening in the villages of Kotchar, Katlint, and Gumuruk.
The fighting already started 2 days ago, exactly yesterday at 2:30, in the place called Kotchar, and the fighting is still continuing, and the casualties in our side not yet confirmed. I think those who went for attack is about 28,000 from two graders, and the fighting is very heavy.
The Secretary General and Acting Administrator for Greater Pibor Administrative Area, Peter Lebelek, says intercommunal violence in Pibor is being fueled by certain senior government officials in Juba, but did not name the individuals. Lebelek says because of that, the national government seems reluctant to intervene.
The mobilization has been done within the town of Bor. Everybody witnessed that. Even leadership of Bor, they know the mobilization that people doing within the town, outside town and within the town. Even the intellectuals, they included in this mobilization. So I could say that this is a political mobilization against another ethnic group. We want to sit as the leaders of the nation and to see the way how to bring those people back to their normal settlement.
Lual Alir Lual, the Jonglei State Youth Union Secretary for Information, denies that Bor youth are attacking Pibor.
That is a great lie. And how do you know that people are from Bor? Do you know them by the color or the language that you speak? Or do you capture one person to say that I'm from Bor?
This week, James Ruai Gatkwoth, the Secretary General of the now defunct BA State, told South Sudan in Focus that thousands of youth in Akobo County were mobilizing to carry out a revenge attack in the Pibor for their relatives who were killed last month. Boyoris warns that if the national government does not stop the clashes, communities from the Greater Pibor Administrative Area will defend themselves. President Kiir's special envoy to Greater Pibor Administrative Area, Akut Lual, says he is not ready to comment because he is mourning a family member who was killed in a land dispute in Gumbo 2 weeks ago.
I will not say anything about it now. I don't know if we Malta or far. I have a cousin who has been killed. Yeah, so I don't have much information about that. I've been engaged with this.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe-Lweth says he has been in self-quarantine after testing positive for COVID-19. He says he has no information about the clashes in Pibor.
I was quarantined, was completely isolated. I don't know much about all that.
I even come to the office for a while and go back to my house. So in case of anything, you better ask the security sector about that, yes.
A special representative of the UN Secretary General, David Shearer, said in a statement earlier this week, the escalating intercommunal clashes in South Sudan are causing immense harm to civilians and risk fooling organized groups into conflicts and could unravel peace agreement. Shearer said since December 2019, there has been an escalating cycle of violence in Jonglei involving the Dinka, Nuer and Murule communities. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng, reporting from Bor.
The United Nations Development Programme has donated 3,000 testing kits to improve the testing capacity for COVID-19 at the Public Health Laboratory in Juba. South Sudan has been testing using polymerase chain reaction, or PCR, which is manual and has a capacity of testing less than 50 samples per day. UNDP says the new testing kits will increase the testing volume and deliver quick results. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Charlie Chisala, the UNDP Global Fund Project Manager, says of the 9,000 Gene Expert Express test kits the UNDP will be donating in all, the first 3,000 were delivered to South Sudan's Public Health Emergency Operations Center this week, which will handle the huge backlog in samples.
This is the first time that South Sudan is actually receiving this consignment of the Gene Expert test kits from CIFID, because it's actually something that is new on the market to support countries in the COVID response. So we are privileged that South Sudan is now also catching up with other countries in terms of expanding their testing capacity beyond the PCR to also use the Gene Expert machine.
South Sudan's health ministry announced recently it was no longer taking new samples for testing in order to clear a backlog of some 4,000 samples collected earlier. South Sudan has been using a technology called polymerase chain reaction, or PCR, to test samples, which is manual and has a capacity of testing less than 500 samples per day. Chisala says with the expert test kits, the health ministry can conduct multi-piece diagnosis on samples, including testing for other viruses.
Staff have already been trained in the use of the Gene Expert machine, and it's already been a plan for the ministry to actually move from single-use diagnosis to multi-piece diagnosis. So just to mention that these Gene Expert machines are also able to do TB diagnosis, HIV diagnosis, and even Ebola.
In addition to the testing kits, UNDP also says it will procure 10 ventilators, personal protective equipment, sample shipment containers, and biohazard bags. UNDP resident representative Dr. Camille Kamaluddin gave South Sudan Health Minister Elizabeth Achue the medical supplies Friday at the Public Health Emergency Center.
We are today handing over 10 ventilators. This is part of our ongoing support. We have also handed over 3,000 Gene Expert tests, consumables, commodities, to advance our testing.
Dr. Richard Lako, the incident manager at the Public Health Emergency Center, says South Sudan has 3 PCR machines, but only one has been functioning. He says the machine could only test about 500 samples a day.
The testing here, the PCR, we are ranging from 500 to sometimes 150 to 500 tests a day at the moment. But if we have that automatic, we'll be able to run up to the 1,000. So we are hoping if we have that rotator in place, we'll be able to run that much.
Dr. Lako says with the availability of the expert test kits or cartilages, South Sudan will be able to operationalize 23 Gene Expert machines across the country that can turn out multiple results within 45 minutes.
We have 3,000 cartilages arrived now. Last week we have another 3,000, now we have 6,000. So we are going to make sure that this one goes to the states to where we have already gene experts so that they use them for the testing of the COVID-19.
Lako says South Sudan now has nearly 100 ventilators with donations from well-wishers and those obtained earlier by the government. As of Thursday, South Sudan has recorded 72 new cases, bringing the total infections to 1,670 with 24 deaths and 48 recoveries. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Still on COVID-19, commercial sex workers in the South Sudanese capital Juba say the outbreak of the coronavirus in the country has chased away their clients who fear contracting the disease. Sex workers at Gumbo suburb of Juba say the number of their clients has dropped and life is tough for them. A health worker with a local non-profit called IntraHealth says her group has been educating commercial sex workers about how to protect themselves and their clients from contracting the coronavirus. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
38-year-old Jennifer Akello says she has been working in the commercial sex business in Juba for the last 5 months. She says she uses the money she earns to buy food and pay school fees for her two children. But since the COVID-19 outbreak, she has not been able to earn a living.
Before, we used to have customers, but nowadays we don't have customers. They are fearing because this is the easy way we can get connected to coronavirus. Before, it used to be like for myself, I used to get like 7, and some other days 4. But you know, business is not the same always every day. It's a different day. But now, we are getting only 1, 2. Some days there's no anybody coming.
40-year-old Juba sex worker Eunice Apio says most clients are avoiding sex workers for fear of contracting the virus. Speaking in Arabic, Apio says many sex workers do not have enough money to buy food or pay rent.
We are facing a lot of conditions. We sleep without food. Most of our clients have run away. There is nothing that we get, even something to pay for rent. Before Corona, I used to get more than 10 men, but now with Corona, I only get 2 men, sometimes nothing. These days, I only beg for food from neighbors.
Apio says most sex workers understand the risk of contracting the virus from clients and are following the preventive measures advised by the World Health Organization and South Sudan's Health Ministry.
When our clients come, we don't shake hands. They come and wash their hands first and then enter into the room. After finishing, he washes his hands and leaves.
Akello says she and other sex workers in Juba always ask clients to wear condoms to avoid contracting HIV/AIDS. And now, unlike in the beginning of the outbreak, they wear masks or handkerchiefs to cover their nose and mouth when serving clients. Speaking in Arabic, 43-year-old Martin Makweth says he used to see a sex worker in Juba, but rarely does now with
COVID-19.
That time, there was no corona, and I used to come frequently to one of the ladies. But when corona came, I was afraid to come because I am not the only one who come to her, and I know she is doing that because of conditions. If she doesn't do it, she will not eat and she will have nothing to send to her children also.
Akello Shamim works for the NGO IntraHealth and he starts with creating awareness on COVID-19 among sex workers in Juba.
In fact, we came and told them about coronavirus. We normally told them to keep social distancing, avoid handshake when you are coughing. Cough at your bent elbow or wear mask if you have. So the mask we gave them, it was only once. We brought them this drum whereby they can put water with a soap so that in case any client comes to them, they need to direct the person to wash the hand and while covering the what? The mouth, mean the face.
Sex workers in Juba say even though they take precautions, they know they could easily contract coronavirus or some other kind of other virus in their line of work and often think about taking up a different source of livelihood. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. How is COVID-19 spreading across Africa? That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who do you listen to in difficult times?
and why?
Mostly I listen to my wife and my dad, because these two people, they know me better than anybody.
I listen most to my mom because she's been through a lot. She has a lot of experience. Anytime I tell her something, she kind of has a solution to the problem.
The person to listen to in difficult times, one, your parents. Two, if you're married, then it should be your partner, because your partner is the person who is there with you every time.
In difficult times, I most of the time listen to my fiancé. When I speak to him, he gives me good advice that helps to calm me down.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A local network of journalists in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, is calling on the transitional government to stop restricting or obstructing the movement of journalists and media personnel to allow them to carry out their duties during the COVID-19 related lockdown. Some Sudanese journalists say they have been harassed at checkpoints. The journalists say some security officers ask them to present documents permitting them to travel to some parts of the country. For VOA News, Michael Atid reports from Khartoum.
In a statement issued Thursday, the Sudanese Journalist Network said dozens of journalists have reported intimidation and harassment in the past few weeks by security forces along checkpoints and bridges as journalists try to cover the fight against COVID-19. The statement describes the act as disturbing and paints a negative image of the country. They say journalists and media have an important role to play in a national effort to fight the pandemic alongside medical staff and many others. Speaking in Arabic, Khalid Ibrahim Iwes, a correspondent for Sky News Arabia in Khartoum, says security forces in Omdurman repeatedly prevented him and his team of three from crossing into Khartoum, where their office is located, even though they presented their press credentials.
I tried to convince them that we were journalists headed to the office and we had a lot of reports to do on the health situation in the country. But they told us that they cannot allow us to cross the bridge under any circumstance.
Iwes says if journalists can no longer head into the field to cover stories about the coronavirus in the country, this is a clear violation of press freedom.
And it neglects the role played by the media during this time. We were expecting the authorities to allow the media to move freely, like medical workers and security forces, because we are all working together to fight this pandemic.
Ahmed Ibrahim works as a freelancer cameraman in Khartoum. Speaking in Arabic, Ibrahim says preventing the media from moving freely will make citizens live in darkness and allow rumors about the COVID-19 circulate among the population.
This way, there will be no accurate information getting to the people, and people will be living in a dilemma. The Minister of Health used to issue written statements, but these statements need to be broken down. People need to hear officials speaking to them directly, like in a press conference.
Late last month, Sudanese Information Minister and government spokesperson Faisal Muhammad Saleh warned journalists against what he termed misinformed information about COVID-19 and said people should always get the right information from the health task force in the country. Sudan has recorded nearly 7,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19, more than 400 deaths, and 2,278 recoveries. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Do The World Health Organization reports the COVID-19 pandemic is accelerating in Africa and moving from the continent's large capital cities into remote rural areas, where it will be more difficult to contain the spread of the disease. Globally, there were more than 7 million coronavirus infections Wednesday, including more than 400,000 deaths. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Latest reports Wednesday put the number of confirmed cases of coronavirus in Africa at more than 200,000, including 5,000 deaths. World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, notes it took 98 days to reach the first 100,000 cases and only 19 days to move to 200,000 cases.
So even though these cases in Africa account for less than 3% of the global total, it's clear that the pandemic is accelerating. 10 of the 54 countries in Africa are currently driving the numbers, and they account for 75% of the total cases. 5 countries account for 71% of the total deaths.
South Africa has the largest number of cases and deaths. Data show the majority of coronavirus deaths in the region follow a similar trend to that seen in Europe and the United States. That is, most who die are over age 60 and have underlying conditions such as diabetes, hypertension, and obesity. The pandemic arrived in Africa in February, later than in other parts of the world. Moeti says this gave countries precious time to prepare for the onset of the crisis. She says the experience gained from combating deadly diseases such as Ebola and HIV/AIDS has enabled countries to quickly scale up their health operations. She says these public health measures have been effective in slowing the spread of COVID-19 in Africa.
The stay-at-home orders and closing of markets and businesses have taken a heavy economic toll, particularly on the most vulnerable and marginalized communities. And we know that many African people work in the informal sector of the economy. So the need to balance between saving lives and protecting livelihoods is a key consideration in this response, and particularly so in Africa.
Africa faces many challenges. Moeti says one of the biggest is the lack of test kits and other supplies. She notes many essential health services are being neglected because of the focus on the pandemic. For example, she says vaccine, preventable disease campaigns, and regular immunizations against killer diseases have been reduced. She expects Africans will have to live with a steady increase of COVID-19 until there is access to an effective vaccine. However, she says the disease probably could be managed, so health systems are not overrun by people who are ill, if Africa gets the supplies and other international support it needs. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The British government is facing strong criticism from its response to the coronavirus pandemic, as latest forecasts suggest the economy could be the worst hit. Globally, Britain has the world's second highest death toll from the virus and is emerging from its lockdown later than most of Europe. For VOA News, Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Early March, as the coronavirus pandemic spread across Europe, Italy, Spain, and France enforced tough lockdowns. But in Britain, streets were busy, supermarkets packed. The country eventually locked down on March 23rd, mainly on the advice of scientists from Imperial College London, who predicted hundreds of thousands of deaths if the virus was left unchecked. Professor Neil Ferguson was one of those scientists, and on Wednesday offered this stark appraisal to lawmakers.
Had we introduced lockdown measures a week earlier, we would have reduced the final death toll by at least a half.
Ferguson resigned from the government's Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies, or SAGE, after he was caught breaking the lockdown rules. Britain has recorded more than 41,000 deaths from COVID-19, the second highest death toll in the world after the United States. Prime Minister Boris Johnson defends the government's response.
We made the decisions at the time on the guidance of SAGE, including Professor Ferguson, that we thought were right for this country.
Britain is still recording hundreds of deaths and thousands of new infections every day, more than its European neighbours, though the government says that's partly due to differences in reporting. But many scientists say Britain did too little, too late.
We had a very relaxed, keep people socially distanced, try to stay at home. It was more of a nudge approach as opposed to that's the rules.
Britain's lockdown is slowly easing. Zoos, theme parks and small shops open next week. Pubs and restaurants remain closed. Cafes in France, Italy and Spain have reopened, as have most schools. In Britain, most pupils will not return to school until September at the earliest. Critics say children are being ignored.
I think we are in danger of leaving children behind in this lockdown lifting and possibly furloughing childhood.
Several European states are banning the entry of travellers from Britain because of its high infection rate. Yet Britain this week introduced a 14-day quarantine for all arrivals in the country, to the dismay of the travel industry.
Imported cases of the virus pose a more significant threat to our national effort and our recovery.
The extended lockdown is likely to hit Britain's economy hard. The OECD Wednesday forecast an 11.5% contraction in 2020, the worst of all developed economies, though only marginally worse than France, Spain and Italy. Any second wave of infection would have an even bigger impact. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Pinyindal by Vivian, singing in her native Shuluk language. This one goes out to James Okuk, who is our avid listener in Juba. Listening to Vivian with the song Dal Piny. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our week. Remember to wash your hands with soap and practice social distancing. do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for the coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.